Hello, and welcome to Albuquerque Theatre Guild's weekly podcast. I'm Mike Miller, and I'm your host. Join us every week. This is where we'll tell you what's happening in performance in Albuquerque. We'll keep a running calendar of shows opening and closing and talk to interesting people involved here in Albuquerque. This time, our special guest is Matthew Eady, who is directing his adaptation of George Bernard Shaw's Mrs. Warren's Profession, Mrs. Warren's Profession 2.0, at the Oxdog Theater. But before we get to Matthew, let's look at what's on stage now and what's coming up. Florian Zeller's The Father continues its run through February 4th at the Vortex. The Adobe Theater Double Wide Texas continues through February 11th. Bonnie and Clyde opened February 2nd at MTS Center for Theater and runs through February 25th. And Albuquerque Little Theater continues a three-week run of Wait Until Dark. And Matthew Eady's adaptation of George Bernard Shaw's Mrs. Warren's Profession opens at the Oxdog on February 2nd and runs through the 25th. Right behind that, Love, Loss, and What I Wore plays at the Adobe for a short run, opening on the 15th and closing on the 18th. The Jewish Community Center Performing Arts presents Up Quartet with an evening of chamber music on February 10th. And Mumenschanz hits Popejoy for a matinee performance on the 17th. Then Opera Southwest presents five performances of Hector Armiento's world premiere opera, Bless Me Ultima, based on Rodolfo Anaya's well-known and loved book of the same name. You've read the book, you've seen the play and the movie. Now hear the opera, February 18th through the 25th. And Baskerville, a Sherlock Holmes mystery, hits Popejoy on Friday the 23rd. Shows coming in March include The Effect, Glengarry Glen Ross, Art, A Chorus Line, Sister Act, Ragtime, and Wish Upon a Star. More on those later. Upcoming auditions include The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime at the Desert Rose Playhouse from 2 to 4 p.m. on February 3rd. The Adobe will be accepting appointments for audition for the Agatha Christie mystery, Black Coffee, on February 10th and 11th. Also on February 10th are music auditions at MTS for Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. For times, tickets, and or information on any of these events, please revisit the Albuquerque Theatre Guild's website at www.abqtheatre.com. That's www.abqtheatre.com. And now let's ask Matthew Eady to join us as our special guest today.
Welcome, Matthew.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Mike.
What I'd like to do initially is have you move a little closer to the microphone.
Okay.
And then give me a little bit of your background. Our audience would like to know who you are.
Sure. Well, some may know me as Matthew Eady. I do I critique shows, I review shows for the Albuquerque Journal. I've been doing that for, probably about 3 years now, or almost 3 years now. I moved from Columbus, Ohio to Albuquerque about 3.5 years ago to teach theater history and dramatic literature at UNM. And it was a one-year appointment, visiting assistant professor of theater history. I had hoped it would grow into a tenure-track position. In fact, I was kind of told it would, hopefully, but it didn't happen. So those things happen. But as it turned out, I was asked they needed a theater critic at the Albuquerque Journal, and Reen Kimball, the former arts editor, called the department in April of the year I was teaching and just asked who there would be good, and somebody put in my name, and so it was perfect because my year of teaching ended at UNM, and then I had this to keep me busy. I also write books. I've written a book on Shaw called Bernard Shaw and Totalitarianism, Longing for Utopia. It's came out in a second edition in 2016, published by Palgrave Macmillan. It's been called the best book on Shaw to appear in a decade by Shaw scholar Lawrence Switsky in the Journal of Shaw Studies, and it's gotten really good reviews all unanimously. So I'm a Shaw scholar, so that's actually why Vicki Liberatore approached me initially to direct a Shaw play. And I thought Mrs. Warren's Profession was perfect because I had seen Bridget Kelly on her stage. And I was like, well, there's Mrs. Warren. Keir Kipnis I'd also seen on that stage and thought she'd be a good Vivi. Turned out Keir couldn't do it, so I found another actor, phenomenal young actress, brand new to Albuquerque. So that's very exciting. But yes, I'm a theater historian, a scholar. I write books. I review plays. My background, however, is as an actor. I started Theo Ubique Theater Company in Chicago. They just celebrated their 20-year anniversary. I left Theo Ubique and Chicago Theater in 2006 to get a PhD at Ohio State University. But I was an actor for a long time, 18 years in Chicago Theater, something like close to 50 productions. Steppenwolf Theater is the most famous company I worked for, but mostly small non-equity companies like Oxdog and, you know, what we call the storefront theater in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But it was great training. So,
what kind of roles did you do?
Oh, I played, I played a wide variety of roles. I played a lot of villains. I played Valmont in La Liaison Dangereuse, Dangerous Liaisons. Mm-hmm. I played a guy named Berlin in a play called Europe, but nobody's probably heard of that. It's by a guy named David Grieg. He's with the National Theater in England, but that was a phenomenal role. I did Mr. Smith in The Bald Soprano, Joey in The Homecoming, Jerry in Betrayal. I did an Ugo Betty play called Crime on Goat Island that nobody's ever heard anymore, a masterpiece. I played Angelo, the lead character. I did a lot of Shakespeare, Christopher Marlowe. I did Edward II. I played Gaveston, Edward's lover in that play, who gets killed by the nobles who are jealous. Not because it's a gay relationship, but because he's an upstart. He's with the king, and he's not from their class. I did John Webster plays, The Duchess of Malfi and The White Devil. So a lot of classical theater. Chekhov, I did The Cherry Orchard. I played Trofimov. And a million other things I'm forgetting.
I understand completely. But that's quite a background. And so you're directing and writing now as opposed to acting.
Yeah. I stopped acting cold turkey when I went to grad school. I was like very narrowly focused, right? I'm going to write a dissertation, get a PhD, which I did. And I kind of rechanneled that energy that went into acting to do scholarship. But when I graduated in 2011, I thought, well, you know, I need to start directing because that's going to be a marketable quality on my CV. So I started directing and I fell in love with it. It turned out that my years of acting I was very good with actors. And of course, everything's important as a director. He's got to see the whole picture. But working with actors is my strength as a director. Mm-hmm. And I've directed like a dozen plays since 2011, some of them staged readings. I did a play even at UNM. I did a main stage show called Ashes Crossing Yellow Lines by a third-year MFA student.
I missed that one.
Yeah, it was a great experience. I wasn't expected to direct when I was hired, but the grad student asked me to direct his play. He was my student.
Yeah, sure.
And he thought that I would do a good job. At first, I directed a stage reading of it. And then he asked his supervisor if I could direct the main stage, which was already set mm-hmm. to go in the spring.
At Rhodey?
No, it was in the X
in
space.
The X,
yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's one of the really nice things about UNM is that they have such magnificent facilities for their students.
So. Oh, it was a great experience. It was a wonderful. The actors were great. I had a great design team. It was a wonderful play, and I hope to see it done again somewhere. Kevin Hathaway wrote it. He's very... very talented. He graduated with an MFA in playwriting that year.
Uh-huh. Wow. Let's talk about Mrs. Warren's Profession.
Sure.
Let's talk about both Mrs. Warren's professions, the original and then, of course, the adaptation, which is what we're looking to see in the coming weeks.
Sure.
Let's talk about George Bernard Shaw a little bit and what his background is and why he would write the social commentary that Mrs. Warren's Profession is.
Sure. So, 1893, Shaw's quote-unquote failed novelist, successful music critic, also reviewing plays, and mostly music, but reviewing everything, art, literature, plays. He starts, under the influence of Ibsen, he writes a play called Widower's Houses about slumlords, and it was too controversial to be produced in London. So a guy named J.T. Grine, who had started something called the Theater Society, or the Independent Theater Society, for private audiences. So if you're a member of the club, you can see the play, and it's not considered a public performance. That's how they got around the censorship. So Widower's Houses got one performance at Grine's Theater, and then he said, Bernard, he liked to be called Bernard, not George. Bernard, this is a little too controversial, even for me, and so we're going to leave it at the one show. Then he writes Mrs. Warren's Profession and shows it to Grine, and Grine won't even give him one show. It was red hot. Nobody would touch it. It was not performed for 32 years publicly after it was written. It got a performance in New York in 1905, about 12 years after it was written, and the cast was arrested. The police came to the theater and arrested the entire cast. So that was the 1905 production. It got a production finally in London in 1925. But it was a very controversial show. His first three shows, he published them in 1898 and called them Plays Unpleasant. He shifted tack after those three plays because he wasn't going to be produced. So he wrote Arms and the Man at that point, which he later called The Pleasant Plays. That and some other ones like Candida, You Never Can Tell. These were the pleasant plays. And then he wrote Plays for Puritans, The Devil's Disciple, and he still had a tough time those first 10 years, but at least after the unpleasant plays, he was getting produced here and there. It wasn't until 1902, when Harley Granville Barker started the Court Theater, that his play, he became the world's most famous playwright in that first decade of the 20th century. But yeah, he had a rough start, and Mrs. Warren was an extremely controversial play.
So for members of the audience who aren't familiar with either Shaw or Mrs. Warren, and we hope there are some who will come get familiar.
I certainly hope so.
That what is Mrs. Warren? What is Mrs. Warren's Profession?
She's a prostitute, and the thing is, Shaw's point in part was that prostitution was not a moral failing, but failing with our economic system. So in 1893, talented women did not have a lot of outlets for their talents. So Mrs. Warren is a very industrious, intelligent woman, very good looking. She doesn't want to get married, which Shaw said, if you get married for money, what's the difference? So she grew up extremely poor. All she had was her good looks, and she could wait tables and attract men for the owner. That was Shaw's idea, for peanuts, for nothing, for pennies. Or she could go into business for herself. She becomes a prostitute, and because she's industrious, ambitious, has great organizational skills, she opens a string of brothels in Europe and becomes an extremely wealthy woman. So that was Mrs. Warren's Profession. First a prostitute, then a madame, as they were sometimes called. And it was, as I said, untouchable. But nobody seems too scandalized anymore. And we decided, when Vicky Liberatore approached me as a Shaw scholar and as the director to direct a Shaw play, it was actually her idea to adapt it to the 21st century. She didn't say in any way what I should do. She said, why not just make it a contemporary show? So I thought about it. At first I was like, well, what's wrong with the original? It's a classic, But then I reread the play and I started thinking about it in terms of what if we translated this into the 21st century to America? What would it look like? And I started to hear the dialogue in my mind as I read it. And I started to think, this is a pretty good idea.
Uh-huh.
And that was the beginning of the new version, what we're calling Mrs. Warren's Profession 2.0.
Okay. So just thematically, I'm understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. that the two are very close, very similar.
Very similar. In fact, half the dialogue is probably still Shaw. I mean, I had a choice. I could totally retranslate the dialogue, mm-hmm. and they could speak less articulately than Shaw's characters. Shaw's characters are notoriously articulate people, but I love the style of the play. I love Shaw's writing, so I had to make a hard choice. I said, okay, if I'm going to bring it to the 21st century America, these are going to be very articulate people because some of the lines of Shaw's are so good, I just couldn't bring myself to delete them. So I would say half the dialogue, or close to it, well, maybe not half, I would say half the dialogue is either Shaw or a close paraphrase. Mm-hmm. And then the other half, or maybe not even half, maybe a quarter, is just new dialogue, new, just totally new stuff.
Okay. So you're bringing it into the modern century, mm-hmm. and it's pretty much the same idea. I'm assuming that the costumes are going to be current, and
oh, yeah.
the haircuts,
oh, yeah. everything,
and the,
yeah,
you know, that sort
they'll
of thing.
They'll have cell phones. They'll talk about the internet,
right?
Things like that.
Okay, and so let me just ask sort of a pointed question mm-hmm. that I really know the
Please.
Answer to, but we're going to have the audience kind of guess and come see what the answer is.
Yeah.
Are you only going to get one performance out of your version?
No, God willing, we're going to get, 12 performances, right? 3 shows a week for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
We live in very liberal times in terms of, you know, we don't have those kind of censorship laws anymore. But I did want to approximate some of the shock and scandal and moral outrage of that first show. When Vicki brought this idea up and I started to think about it, it just seemed to me, well, how can we capture some of that intensity? And so I will let the audience come and find out, you know, if I was successful as far as that goes. But it's still Shaw. It's a Shavian play. It's an adaptation in the style of, say, Rebecca Gilman's version of The Doll's House, which she just calls Doll House, or... there's a version of The Seagull called Stupid Effing Bird that Fusion Theater did last year. It was a wonderful production. It's still The Seagull. It's still The Doll's House. But it's also Rebecca Gilman. It's also, I forget the playwright's name that did Stupid Effing Bird. But it's a little bit in that tradition. I would say I'm probably closer to Shaw than they are to Chekhov and Ibsen.
Mm-hmm.
I could, because I preserved so much of the language, and when I was writing dialogue, I had to capture the style of Shaw's writing. Otherwise, I had to chuck it all.
Right.
So.
Right. So your version then is going to be definitely an adult version, like Shaw's
oh, yeah.
was.
Yes, it's for mature audiences only, for sure.
Okay, just. A lot of times we see adaptations and they say, oh, yeah, sure, children are welcome.
Not this one.
Not this one. Just want to be clear up front. However, like Shaw's time, you've let me in on a little bit of it. We're not going to release any spoilers, but it's got some serious social implications.
Oh, yeah. I think it's an extremely responsible play. Shaw felt he was extremely responsible. He was like, in his day, you could almost do anything so long as the woman repented at the end and killed herself. You know, then it was fine. You could do anything. Mrs. Warren really is unapologetic about being a prostitute, and that was really the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a serious play about serious social problems right now that should be talked about. It's an exciting play, I think. If you like Shaw, you'll like the play, probably. So... it's a very Shavian play, and in that he was the preeminent dramatist of ideas. He called his plays discussion plays.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, discussion without dramatic tension and action can not always captivate for 2 hours. So he was a genius at making great drama out of the discussion play, and it's in that tradition.
Mm-hmm. What else would you have us know about Mrs. Warren's profession 2.0?
Well, the characters are the same, really. They have the same names. They have the same professions. You know, Vivi went to Harvard instead of Oxford, you know. I mean, there's a lot of different... Just taking that play from 1893 to 2016, it's summer 2016, is, I mean, changes a lot, you know. I mean, George mm-hmm. Crofts is a Wall Street hedge fund manager. What some people call a vulture capitalist, in the pejorative.
Yeah, sure.
You know, he specializes in distressed debt acquisition. You know, there's references to the 2008 crash.
Yes.
He made a bundle. A lot of people, you know, became impoverished. So there's Pansolini. Nobody will recognize this name. Stefan Pansolini. Shaw's character's name is Praed. And I've never liked that name for some reason, P-R-A-E-D. So I just changed his name to Stefan Pansolini. I don't know where I got that name. It just popped into my head. So he's gay in this play. The thing is, Praed in the original was a representative of what was called the art for art's sake movement. He was into culture. He loved music, and opera made him weep, but he didn't want any social message whatsoever in his art. And Shaw despised the art for art's sake movement. And so Praed was his representative of that movement he hated. So in our show, Stefan Pansolini is still an aesthete. He cries at the opera. He loves going to the museums. And there's even a reference to Shaw in the play. Vivi says that she was taken to a Shaw play, and she says something to the effect, which Shaw's critics have always said, I didn't even know that tedious windbags plays were still done. Maybe I shouldn't give this away because it would be funny to hear when you're not expecting it. But Pansolini then defends Shaw as the great comic genius, the great dramaturgical master that he is. I couldn't resist that little.
So it's not a complete left turn veering away from the original, but there are significant kinds of differences that the audience will be able to
chew on for a while. As I've said, it's still Shaw, it's still a Shavian play, but it's also something else. If you like Shaw, you should like this production, assuming I can get it to where it needs to be, and we're very close right now, as we should be a few days before opening. I've got some of the best actors in Albuquerque in the show. So it's coming along. And Shaw's not done here. I mean, I'm a theater critic. I see every show that opens in this town, just mm-hmm. about, unless mm-hmm. I'm out of town or something. And 3 years, Shaw's never been done that I've seen. I hear about shows that were done before I got here, but Barry Gaines told me very, very seldom is Shaw done.
Yeah.
In Albuquerque. For whatever reason, I don't know. He's generally considered the second greatest English playwright after Shakespeare.
Barry Gaines?
No, that's... no!
Sorry, that's a theater joke. He was your predecessor.
Your deadpan delivery had me fooled.
No, that's... So being a theater guy myself, a director, producer, actor, I sometimes have a great deal of trouble with people who decide that they can bring Shakespeare forward. Mm-hmm. But we'd be interested to see how Shaw comes forward. And, it's one of those things that, Shakespeare, of course, I'm not sure about Shaw, but Shakespeare wrote some, like, five-act plays that go on forever. 5 hours, and that sort of thing, 6 hours.
Sure, Kenneth Branagh tried to do an uncut Hamlet, or he did an uncut Hamlet cinematically, and
right,
what, 4:10 or something like that.
Yeah,
it's a long show.
Yeah, and but the thought has always occurred to me is that, and I'm going to ask you this,
please.
What sort of hubris does it take to rewrite a master?
That's a good question, Mike. Well, as I said, I was very inspired by some of these other adaptations I've seen lately. We're in new territory now. I mean, 21st century, with the technology that we're in, some of these plays, I think, are worth looking at in fresh ways. It's a dangerous enterprise, right? I love those two plays I mentioned, the Seagull adaptation and the Doll's House adaptation. I've read others. Yes, it takes... I hope it wasn't hubris. I hope it was a genuine love of theater and wanting to see this play produced in a fresh way. So you all will be the judge if we succeeded or not.
Well, that's sometimes the thought that goes through my head is like, well, I've seen some people rewrite this and I've seen some people who shouldn't be rewriting this.
Sure. So, it's a it's a risk.
With your background, though, I would anticipate that it would be a very good adaptation.
I think so. I'm happy with it. It's gone through, 20, 25, 30 revisions, something like that. Yeah. I'm constantly working at it. Even now, I'm cutting a line here or adding a clause there. But essentially, it's done, but it's really changed a lot. We were going to do this last year, and we weren't ready yet, and some of the actors we wanted weren't available, so we decided to wait, and I did a lot of research, actually, I've spent about a year researching, and so I went back to the drawing board, and I liked what I had before, but it's significantly changed from that, and it just gets tighter and tighter and more interesting, and always trying to write in the spirit of Shaw.
Very nice, very nice. So the show runs at the Oxdog, and the dates are again?
Yeah, Oxdog Theater. We open Friday, February 2nd, and we'll be running until Sunday, February 25th. It's a four-weekend run. Okay. Friday and Saturdays at 8, and Sundays at 2, I think. Yeah, Oxdog's 2. So, 3 shows a week, 4 weeks, through February.
Well, good luck with the show. Break a leg. And, Matthew, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Mike, so much. This was great fun.
That does it for us this week. Join us again next week as the Albuquerque Theatre Guild's podcast will keep you up to date on what's playing and bring you special features like performance interviews and a bit of insider knowledge. If you've been enjoying our programs, please like us, comment, and share with your friends on other social media platforms. Until we're together again, go see some live performance art, and we'll look for you right here next week.